This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Copy and print.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. And our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. We've got a great show for you today, starting out with Jillian Van Stratt. Jillian works for SpartanMag.com, and she's going to be our first guest and talk a little bit of Spartan football coming up this week. Jillian, how you doing?
Good. How you doing, Earl?
Hey, doing good. And, you know, we just left that press conference with Coach, D'Antonio, and what did you make of it? I mean, not much was said about Indiana. I know everybody was going to talk about Ohio State, but you would have thought that he might have addressed Indiana a little bit more.
Well, yeah, maybe if he was asked more questions about it, right?
Yeah.
he was asked one question. It was almost more of a historical question about Indiana,
yeah.
But yeah, no love for the brass platoon, huh?
No. So what do you see in that game? What do you think that, I mean, everyone is expecting, you know, they're a big favorite, so they're expecting an easy win, but, you know, from Michigan State's standpoint, you know, we haven't seen a lot of offense. So what do you expect might happen in that game? Will Spartan fans be disappointed again or shocked if Michigan State's offense doesn't wake up yet?
Well, I'm sure some fans will be disappointed. That's how fans work, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that probably for the first time this season, Michigan State's kind of coming into a game looking to get the running game going. I mean, of course, they always want to establish the running game, but
yeah.
There's been such a focus kind of game plan-wise and player individually speaking to get the passing game going, to get the receivers and the timing with Maxwell down to you know, eliminate the drops. And I think that for the first time this season, you know, really I can see Michigan State focusing in on this running game and needing to get some things established there as kind of maybe perhaps for the first time a priority on fixing the problems in the running game.
Yes, because they're certainly going to need the running game. I mean, that last game, as we saw, what every time Anthony Bell, I mean, you know, Bell got a little bit of space, they are always – you thought he was going to break one, but they always seem to grab him up from behind. They always seem to catch him and bring him down by the ankles and such. A lot of that happened. He just could never get into space for the most part. Is that a part and parcel because of his running style, the way he runs, that they're able to bring him down, or one guy for the most part? Sometimes two guys brought him down, but you know, it sort of looks to me like he's not as powerful as they thought he was.
Well, I think that Le'Veon Bell still is a very powerful runner. And, I mean, you bring up a good point with his style. I mean, he's never been a guy necessarily who has gets his yardage in a few longer runs. It's more about the amount of times that they come pounding at you against that defense. And that's been a little bit of an issue, I think, that holds back his statistics this year and held him back the Ohio State game. Because if you talk to him after Ohio State, you know, he kind of felt like he was ready to bust a long one, that he was on the verge of being able to get that longer run and get into space coming into that fourth quarter. And I think that's often been a philosophy of the Michigan State offense here under D'Antonio, is that they kind of pound at you. That's supposed to, you know, reap the rewards late in the game when guys are tired. And Roshar spoke to that as well, that, you know, they did feel like Le'Veon Bell was on the verge of cracking the long one, but they just didn't feel like they got the opportunity to do so late in the game when maybe they needed a score. And also with Ohio State, like you said, loading the box and determined to stop the run, which they were able to do. Le'Veon Bell has never had all those home runs. I think as long as this year's 35 yards, as long as rushing gain on a single run last season was 35 yards. So he'd rather just keep pounding at you, but they definitely need him to get a higher average per carry than he had last week against Ohio State.
Yes, and we know that, you know, everybody's going to try to stop the run against Michigan State, and if that's successful, State, you know, has to go through the air, and they haven't been able to do that consistently. So what do you look for the air game this week? You know, they're starting a Brundage, you know, and De'Anthony Arnett, I see he's listed on the two deeps for a change. So they're going to they probably got to just give everybody a shot now because they've been so inconsistent.
Yeah, well, we did see some success in their passing game last week for the first time, and that's encouraging because that can do nothing but help the running game. If teams aren't able to just completely sell out for the run, they're going to have to cover some guys downfield. But we did finally kind of see a change in the depth chart today with true freshman Aaron Burridge being listed as the starting X receiver instead of Benny Fowler. And, you know, we've all seen some drops. Benny Fowler's kind of had some more high-profile drops, a couple in the end zone this season, but also I think that it was kind of a play that he really went against him in terms of his playing time was covering up Deion Sims on the ineligible receiver downfield play last week against Ohio State. You know, I believe it was Fowler that lined up and covered up Sims there, negating a real big play, and MSU looks to have those big plays certain amount per game, and that was a good call, you know, a good play, and just wasn't executed correctly due to that. So, and I think that what D'Antonio said is true. You know, if you're going to pull the red shirts off of guys like Garrett Kings and Aaron Burridge, then you're going to play them. There's no point. It's not fair to the kid to pull the red shirt and not try it out. So this almost is a little bit of an audition and a trial for Aaron to see what he does when he's given the starting role, when he's going to give a lot more balls are going to come his way, and see what he does with it.
Yes, we know that in the last couple of years, 2 to 3 years, even maybe, he's gotten mostly a lot of two and three star players. He doesn't get many of the 4 and 5 star players. Do you think he's going to have to go after more 4 or 5 star players? I mean, I heard people talking about that today, that State doesn't do that well, they really don't go after that many. But they might have to nowadays. When you look at what Ohio State, Michigan is doing, Notre Dame is doing, you know, are they going to have to change their recruiting philosophy, you think?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm not a big stargazer. You know, look at Le'Veon Bell. Look at him being, you know, listed in the Heisman race and what a great back he was. And he's out of Columbus, Ohio, and he's not a 4 or 5 star guy. You know, you look at that. I think that D'Antonio and his staff, from what I know, that their recruiting philosophy has been, you know, preferably to be able to get a guy in camp and be able to evaluate him and be able to find guys that they think are going to be right for their system, not just system schematically, but the right type of guy, the right type of character that they're looking for. And, you know, you can have all the 5 stars you want on your team. If you don't develop them while they're here, what good is a 5-star, you know? It doesn't win you games unless they're out there playing on. And I think D'Antonio and his staff are in on some highly ranked players this year, and you know, they're going to have to fight that, and they know that, you know, wins make the biggest difference sometimes in those recruiting battles. You know, they're getting a lot of high-profile recruits in on visits. They're getting national attention on TV, you know, and playing a lot of those games, but this staff has been able to win the Big Ten without all these 5 stars, so I don't really see the problem there.
Yes, and what we know with Urban Meyer now in the Big Ten, the recruiting, I guess, has to change. The philosophy's certainly going to change, you know, because he's recruiting, as you know, he didn't send Mark the best game film from the previous games that Ohio State had played. So that's going to affect somehow it's going to affect recruiting and the way he's trying to recruit. He's trying to, you know, close up the borders. So we could see some changes in how Michigan State recruits Ohio. It is as their primary ground outside of the state of Michigan. They do very well in the state of Ohio. Do you see that possibly happening just because of Urban Meyer and what Urban Meyer brings to the table?
It's possible. I think Ohio State's always, no matter, you know, what coach has been in there, you know, and if an Ohio kid gets an Ohio State offer, that's always tough to compete against. But what I see affecting D'Antonio's staff's recruiting philosophy, you know, the most is just the accelerated nature of the process. Yes. I mean, when you're able to identify kids because they come into your camp and they play and you're able to find the guys that you want and identify talent past the point of just star rankings, but this accelerated process doesn't always allow you to wait until a kid gets in camp of things before you've got to be in on him. You know, it's just pushing further and further. So I think that makes things more difficult than anything.
Okay. Well, what intrigues you about this Indiana game coming up Saturday?
Well, number one, I would say what intrigues me is it feels like the first true road game. Of course, Michigan State traveled to Mount Pleasant, and that had a different feel towards it. It was also just right up the road. But it'll, I think that, you know, and somebody even asked Andrew Maxwell about it today, it's almost kind of one of those times you wonder if it's a good time for the team to go on the road. I know Izzo's always been a fan sometimes when you want to kind of bring a team together.
Yeah.
When you want them to have an us-against-the-world mentality, you need to kind of take them out of their comfort zone, out of East Lansing, where they just have each other, you know, where they're on the road together, and they go into an environment where everyone's not cheering for you and kind of battle against that. And right now, D'Antonio wants his guys to rise up. You know, they are unranked. They are, you know, 3-2. People are coming at him. He kind of wants them to rise up against that. Sometimes a road game works perfectly into that plan. That intrigues me, number one. The second thing that intrigues me is if you want to get your running game going, Hoosiers may be the team that you can do that against. Right now, they're giving up 394 rushing yards a game. They're also giving up 58 rushing attempts. People are rushing against them. So they're giving up 6.8 yards per carry. And I think Michigan State, you know, especially with the injuries on the offensive line right now, this may be a good venue in which to get that running game in order.
Okay. Got a caller for you on the line. Let's go up to Grand Rapids, and Tom is with us. Tom, how you doing?
Hey, Earl, good. How are you?
Okay.
Couple quick things. I guess, A, I wonder if you could help with what you think Andrew Maxwell, where he's at with audibling, looking for secondary receivers, that kind of thing. Because, you know, you see an awful lot, especially with Ohio State, everybody's going to do this to us. They're going to load up that box and say, here you go. And it doesn't appear like we're prepared for that or something. Or does he just not have that flexibility, ability, or what do you think?
Well, he was asked about that today at the press conference. Jillian, what's your thought on how ready or how good Andrew Maxwell is at this point?
I think that Andrew Maxwell is right where you would expect him to be development-wise. You know, he hasn't had a lot of time to throw the ball. That's true. There's been some pressure on him. But we've seen him develop and evolve over the course of the season so far. I think that he's throwing far more accurately. You know, he's got, obviously, everybody knows he's got a lot of zip to the ball. And obviously, if you take away a lot of those drops that aren't Maxwell's fault, his statistics would look a lot different to a lot of people. So,
that's true.
I don't see too much concern in terms of Maxwell's play. I know the caller asked about, you know, audibles and checking. I know there's been some concern that he's locking onto wide receivers at the line of scrimmage. And that may be true. I think that kind of comes with the territory of being young and being inexperienced. And that I see that happening less and less. But he is audibling and checking down. Le'Veon Bell mentioned it, you know, after the Eastern game, how good of a job Maxwell was doing at the line, identifying things and checking, making the checks and keying in on different plays. So.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot, Tom.
Oh, okay, hey, I have one more quick thing.
Sure.
If you have time for it. Okay, I also don't know, being there Saturday, that we're doing a great job of helping ourselves. I'll give you two examples, and then I'll hang up and listen to you on the radio. At the end of the first half, we had the ball with like 56 seconds left. We were down around the 25-yard line of Ohio State, and we had three timeouts left. And instead of taking some timeouts and making sure we were doing the right thing, it seemed like we just ran three plays and we were done. And then towards the end of the game, when we were down 17-13, same kind of yard line position, we had a 3rd-and-3, and then offensive play calling, we go to that crazy bubble screen thing with four guys out there, run Le'Veon in motion, and end up losing yardage. At that junction of the game, or that part of the game, I thought it was really critical that we just take our two downs, get our 3 yards, and keep going. We needed to score, not kick a field goal and be down by a point. But I'll hang up and listen to your comments on those two items.
Thank you. Yeah. Jean, why don't you address those two?
Well, I'll go to his second question first, which was, you know, the kind of play calling, if you, yeah, there where they went down to, he said, to the screen pass and things, and happen, get the field goal instead of kind of get more. You know, D'Antonio spoke about that a little bit. You know, the time that was left in that game, and, you know, they did choose to take those points. also thinking they had timeouts left, and there was, I believe, over 6 minutes left in the game, that they'd be able to get the ball back.
With the way the defense
has been playing, I understand that confidence.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, hindsight's 20/20 in that, when it ends up that you don't get the ball back, which is, of course, what D'Antonio pointed to. They couldn't stop Ohio State's rushing attack when it matters. But they were thinking they'd be able to get the ball back there, and that then, you know, a field goal could win it. The other point was maybe a play calling to, you know, screen pass running Le'Veon Bell in motion.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the screen pass had been quite effective all day. They hadn't been able to run the ball against Ohio State that well, but Le'Veon Bell had a career day in numbers of receptions and receiving yards. And so, you know, that's tough, but that's exactly what Roshar pointed to as well. You know, they needed to be able to execute there. So I think he understands the college frustration that they couldn't get those 3 yards in another way.
Okay. Hey, Jillian, I want to thank you for joining me today and talking a little Michigan State football. You know, we'll do it again. It's a long season, so we'll be back again to discuss the Spartans, and hopefully it'll be a lot better when we get you on again, that their record will be much better. So, but we'll look ahead to the future as well.
All right. Sounds good, Earl.
Okay. Thank you, Jillian.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
You.
And that's Jillian Van Stratt from SpartanMag.com, talking about Michigan State football. You can just read her on SpartanMag.com. Her and Jim Comperoni and all the folks there at SpartanMag.com, they do a great job of giving you information about Michigan State football. Hey, the time now, 21 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Mitt Romney called Russia America's number one enemy. Russia does have a new leader, or an old leader back again, Vladimir Putin, and elections in several former Soviet states could give Russia a chance to recapture some of its dominance. I'm David Green. What Russia Wants, plus baseball, let the playoffs begin. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Good afternoon, I'm Scott Pohl, and here's the weather. Our high today, 68 degrees, mostly cloudy and a chance of rain. Overnight, showers are likely. We'll have a low in the mid-50s. Tomorrow, a high of 69 and cloudy with a good chance of rain. Thursday, mostly sunny. The high will be 74.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527. Or toll-free, 877-952-7870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Let's talk a little bit more Michigan State football. Let's bring in Lansing State General Reporter Chris Solari. Chris, how you doing?
Doing great today, Earl. How about yourself?
Hey, doing good, buddy. And, we got to talk a little bit more about Michigan State. And, you know, what are you looking for? What do you expect between Michigan State and what they see in Indiana? We know Indiana doesn't have a very good defense, so I assume they should be able, I mean, we don't know they will, but they should be able to score a little bit more this week.
Yeah, I think that what you want to see out of Michigan State this week is what they should have shown against Eastern Michigan a couple weeks ago. You need to see some explosive plays, and it's got to be in the passing game, because that's going to open up the running game. And you saw that with Ohio State last week. Ohio State just loaded the box and said, throw it on us. And, you know, Michigan State showed a little bit in the passing game, but not enough to really free up Ohio State from dropping eight guys in the box to load up on Le'Veon Bell. I mean, there was no running room inside with the push they were getting. There was no running room to the outside. And so consequently, I think you want to see Andrew Maxwell be able to stretch the field. It'll be interesting to see, with the change today at wide receiver, Aaron Burbridge rises to number one on the depth chart over Benny Fowler now. So it'll be interesting to see where the explosive plays come, if that's the spot. And Mark Antonio also said he wants to get Megarrett Kings the ball more too. So I think you're starting to see a little shift to the younger receivers.
Yes, because they certainly need a push there. So hopefully they'll show up. And also, I saw and noticed D'Anthony Arnett was on the two deeper. I think he's going to be third string on one side. So he may, you know, he's been complaining that he hasn't getting enough plays. So maybe his complaining is working. That maybe he'll probably get a few chances this week.
That's what you hope. You hope to see the kind of reps for a lot of different guys that haven't really seen them yet. You know, Keith Mumphrey obviously has become kind of the go-to target on the outside. He's shown the ability to catch the ball and be sure-handed, and obviously making that big touchdown play almost single-handedly, where he dragged about six or seven guys into the end zone. That's that's what, something that I think that going forward, they just need that stretch, the guy that stretched the defense, which, you know, Fowler hasn't shown that ability yet. Tony Lippett hasn't shown that ability yet, though he's still keeping his starting job and did show the ability to catch some more balls against Ohio State in some in routes and a couple out routes. So, but yet you need that deep threat. You need that deep threat to be able to extend the defense and say you got to play us in the back half of the secondary, whether it's going to be Arnett, whether it's going to be Burbridge, whether it's going to be Kings. I think you'll see this week that they'll get a shot to show what they can do.
Yes, and that's one thing. When we look at that Michigan State team, the other part of that is, you know, on the defensive side, it seemed like they ran out of gas a little bit when they got near the end on the defensive side. It just seemed like Ohio State, they ran out those last 4.5 minutes, which Michigan State, everyone thought that they would be able to stop them and get the ball back one more time. It didn't happen. So what do you see with the defense and how good are they? I mean, he got asked quite a few questions today about the defensive end. So are you as satisfied or as positive on them as we were at the beginning of the year about how this Michigan State defense was supposed to be so good?
I think that they're still playing at a high level. I don't think they're playing at the highest level that they can or that anybody thought that they would be at. You're not seeing the interior push, you know, between the defensive tackles, between Anthony Rashad White and James Kittredge and Mekaja Reynolds and, you know, that's an area of need. They're not getting that drive. What you saw with Jonathan Hankins of Ohio State, he was driving Michigan State offensive lineman back 2-3 yards into the backfield and forcing the line of scrimmage backward. And you haven't really seen that in the middle with Michigan State's defensive tackles. On the edge, the one thing that the coaches talk about is how interconnected everything is. If you can't get that interior push, you know, then all of a sudden your lateral pursuit with your end rushers isn't the same. You're not getting at the quarterback. And then that means that you got to have your linebackers coming up and helping. You got to have your secondary, you know, you got the secondary with the safeties coming down to help on the run and your cornerbacks on an island. So, you know, once they get some interior pass rush, I mean, that's the area of need that people thought would be a little bit better this year. That we're seeing the loss of Jarrell Worthy is a lot bigger than I think a lot of people thought coming into the year.
Yes, I was one of them. I thought they'd be able to survive that, but it certainly hasn't happened. But that's, as we know, that's part of college football. Guys come and go. You know, they leave, or if they leave early, you know, we might see a few guys leaving early after this year. I mean, guys just don't come and stay 4 years all the time anymore, do they, Chris?
No, they don't, and I think that you know obviously Jarrell Worthy leaves early. That's a big loss. I mean, if you throw Jarrell Worthy in the middle of this defense right now, I think you're talking about maybe the best defense in the country. As I said, they're still playing at a very high level. They're not giving up a lot of points. That last week they started to get some takeaways against Ohio State. I think they were 3+3 with takeaways. So you're seeing again across the board, you're seeing positive trends. But the two losses, the fan base right now, and it's interesting because I've had this conversation with a few people. I think Michigan State's fan base is in a point where they're overreacting a bit, not necessarily even because of what's going on with the team, but more because they don't want to see the program slip back to mediocrity, which I don't necessarily think you're going to see.
Right.
But anytime you've had the sustained success over the last 2 years that the program has had, an unprecedented success, you start to build those expectations without maybe taking into account that there's going to be those dips and dives, almost a roller coaster at times in a program.
Yes, oh, so true. Hey, I wanted to ask you a philosophical question. Let's see, and it goes around Keith Mumphrey's touchdown pass last week. As you know, everybody's these days, it happens all throughout college football. Everybody these days is swiping, trying to create a turnover. I saw a lot of guys on that play and many other plays, you know, they're not getting a sure tackle, not wrapping up and bringing a guy down, but they're trying to swipe and knock the ball away. Are we getting too far in that direction? Do teams, you know, Michigan State included, all of them, do they need to do more just tackling and not trying to create a turnover? Because that can burn you if you trying to create a turnover and not wrapping up all the time and getting a sure hit.
Well, I think it's less about the swiping at the ball and more about the attempts to just knock guys off their feet with your shoulder rather than wrapping them up. That, to me, is the bigger problem on the defensive side of the ball. I kind of call it the Troy Polamalu effect, because what he does is he just throws his body around the field and expects to knock guys off his feet. You see it with some of the secondary guys at Michigan State, where they're not trying to go for the leg tackles or lower body. They're going for a shoulder to knock a guy off balance or knock him out of bounds rather than wrapping him up. And if you have that, if you have the guys that are going at the feet and making form tackles, then you can have those second and third guys coming in and swiping at the ball, because you do. I mean, you need to make turnovers. That's the reality in college football right now. There's very few teams that can get by just going three and out, three and out, and three and out. You got to be able to force the issue at times. But again, I agree with you wholly, though, that tackling as an art form has really devolved over the past decade. And like I said, I think it's a lot to do with what's going on at the highest level. They're seeing guys throwing their bodies around rather than wrapping up. And you see that trickle-down effect into every level of football right now, which it's sad, because, I mean, you know, I grew up with the Steelers defenses that had those form tacklers with Jack Ham and Jack Lambert and even the cornerbacks with Donnie Shell, and in the secondary with Mel Blount and Donnie Shell. I mean, the one thing that you're seeing now, though, is these guys that they just want to knock a guy off their feet and make the big hit rather than making the tackle and stopping him.
Yeah, good point. Hey, let's go over to Laker Orion and talk with Todd. Todd, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Good afternoon, Chris. Good afternoon, Earl.
How you doing?
I want to hit on two things that I've noticed. Obviously, we knew what a dynamic player Keyshawn Martin was, and I think a lot of people are focusing on the receiving aspect, given what the struggles have been. But one thing I've noticed, and I don't want to be overly critical of anybody, you know, Keyshawn Martin helped us with field position so much. I mean, he really did. I mean, you know, not that this offense has been dynamic anyways, but, you know, the difference between having to go 60 yards and 80 yards in a football game is huge. I mean, even like 10 yards on a drive. I mean, and I guess, obviously, that it helps you to realize what a special player he was and what, you know, not just the touchdowns, but just the consistency on the punt returns and the kick returns. Instead of starting on the 25, if you start on the 35 or the 40, and I think Hill's done a decent job, but, you know, what can they do to maybe spice it up? Do you think it's just a matter of personnel? And then finally, you know, the offensive line has had injuries. You know, they've got guys that have come in. But I think we need to be honest about what it is. You know, Joel Foreman was not a kid that was going to necessarily – I not even want to ask you this. I don't think he even got drafted or did he have a physical issue. But, you know, when you lose a kid that was such a leader and such a strong player in the interior, I know as a guard he's not valued like a tackle, but, you know, really it almost seems to me as they really need somebody to step up into that leadership role. And I know McDonald's been there a while, but is that something that you see maybe that we're not appreciating, is when you lose a player like a Joel Foreman, how hard he is to replace from just an intangible standpoint? Thanks a lot.
Sure. Let's start with the offensive line with Joel Foreman. Foreman basically hung up his career because of injuries. He didn't even attempt to pursue pro ball because of that. But you're right about the fact that Foreman was really an emotional leader and a physical leader on that offensive line. And that's a big loss that not a lot of people are really talking about, because there had been so much else back. I mean, so many other guys who had playing experience back. And, you know, I mean, Chris McDonald's a guy that Mark Antonio said today needs to step up his vocal leadership a little bit. He said he's kind of a quiet leader, but, you know, I mean, one of the things that you saw if you go back and watch the Ohio State game is that Hankins was really pushing him back, and that was really where the point of attack started in that game on the line. So I think that with the injuries on the offensive line, there's going to be some juggling. I mean, you might see Ethan Ruland at center this week. You could see either Jack Allen or Blake Treadwell at center and some other combination on the line. And, you know, you want to try to minimize the amount of mixing and matching you do on the line, because it's, you know, I heard Chris Collinsworth earlier talking about how it's almost like a ballet dance in a way, or some sort of Rockettes move to play on the offensive line, because everything has got to be in sync. So, I mean, McDonald's a guy that does have to produce a little bit more in the blocking game, but then also with those two injuries to Finotti and now Jackson, I mean, those are the two guys who are probably the best linemen on that team. So, I mean, you know, it's, you know, two steps forward. Where can they take those steps, you know, from going backwards? Now, look back to Keyshawn Martin. That's a guy that I thought coming into the year was going to be one of the hardest to replace, and I think you've seen that with Nick Hill. I mean, as you said, he's kind of done an okay job at punt, in kick returns. In punt returns, he's been, I don't want to say atrocious or abysmal, but he's had some serious lapses. That's why in the Eastern Michigan game, you saw them bring out Le'Veon Bell, because he can catch the ball and make that first or second guy miss. And that's a point of growth that Nick Hill's going to have to learn from. I mean, he's still struggling with a little bit of decision-making and when to catch the ball, when to let it go. And you saw that last week when he let one bounce high off the turf and then got, as I put in the paper, I said he nearly got decapitated by an Ohio State defender who got a penalty on that. But you can't expect that to always happen. But the field position, I think the Notre Dame game, I kind of looked at it, and it was about an 8 to 10 yard difference between last year and this year between Keyshawn Martin in the punt game and Nick Hill. So that's an area of concern moving forward.
Yes, that's quite a challenge for Michigan State, that's for sure. Hey, Chris, when we look at how this team overall has been performing, like the last caller said, they've performed okay in somewhat. What do they need to do? How can they get to the next step other than, as a coach always says, work hard and work hard and we'll get to the next step and do other things? What do you think they need to do?
Well, I think the first thing, and they showed after the loss, they didn't really push the panic button like a lot of the fans did, which I think is, from an internal standpoint within the program, that's a good thing, because you don't want players starting to jump ship, starting to second-guess themselves, their teammates, their coaches. There was an accord across the board in terms of how they viewed that game and how they used that moving forward. I think that's from an emotional and mental standpoint. That's a big thing. And I think that's the biggest thing, because they're not too far away from making a lot of those plays. I mean, you know, Mark D'Antonio said about an inch here, an inch there. I mean, the Johnny Adams pass that Miller threw to Devin Smith, that's a play that if Johnny Adams either looks up and knocks the ball down a second earlier, or looks up and doesn't go for the swipe and just tries to tackle him, maybe it's not a touchdown. You got the Curtis Drummond play, which is blown dead, which, you know, that whistle doesn't blow and the ref sees it and calls it a fumble right away. That could be a touchdown. It's not all doom and gloom, I guess is the way to put it. The passing game still is an issue, though. And I think that you're seeing more and more that the reps that they're getting is starting to help a little bit, and they're starting to get a little more confidence and trust in catching the ball, and Maxwell's getting a little more trust in throwing the ball, which I think is another critical piece. There needs to be that trust between quarterback and receiver. I mean, you're talking about a guy, Maxwell, who's thrown three interceptions all in the first half of his first collegiate start, two of them that bounced off his receivers. I mean, people talk about Maxwell being a weak link on this team. I don't think it's that at all. I think he's been throwing the ball, especially I saw him throw into double coverage a couple times against Ohio State with some much better finesse and touch than I've seen throughout the course of the first few games. It's just that the Ohio State defensive backs were knocking the ball out of the receiver's hands with pretty big hits. So, again, you got to catch the ball. That's the big thing. Catch and block is the two things that are going to help this team moving forward that they need to address pretty quickly.
Yes. So what do you think they're going to have to do against Indiana? We know Indiana has a very porous defense. So can they take advantage of Indiana's sorry defense and get further ahead?
Can they? Yes. Will they? That's the question that I think that remains to be seen, because we thought that they would do that exact same thing against Eastern Michigan, which obviously it did not happen until late in the game when they just went to Le'Veon Bell and Deion Sims exclusively. You need to see some other playmakers. You saw it a little bit last week. You saw Keith Mumphrey get into the action in terms of catching passes. They used Le'Veon Bell a little more creatively out of the backfield in terms of screens. That's something that people really haven't talked about with his lack of rushing yards. They came in with a game plan to use him in the screen game to try and soften up the middle of that defense. What you get from Burbridge and Kings is going to be critical down the stretch here. And you need to throw Arnett into that mix too, because we don't have a lot of game footage on these guys. We don't have a lot of in-game experience to go from. So, I mean, if Maxwell can make a connection with one, two, or all of those guys to stretch the field, I mean, Arnett's been able to get downfield, hasn't been able to break free yet, or Maxwell's been under pressure and hasn't been able to get to him in the few plays that he's been in. I think that's going to be one of those keys this week. You want to see this passing game kind of open it up a little bit. Not even so much from a production standpoint, but from a confidence standpoint.
Okay. Hey, Chris, I want to thank you for joining me. Always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. It's a long season, so we'll be talking more, of course, during this Michigan State season.
Yeah, absolutely, Earl. Take care of yourself. We'll talk soon.
Yep. Talk to you later, buddy. Yep. Okay. Bye-bye. Yep, that's Chris Solari from the Lansing State Journal Reporter talking sports with us right here on AM 870. The time, 40 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
The bodybuilder, the Hollywood megastar, the governor or governator. We know that Arnold Schwarzenegger, and we learn much more in his new book. The former governor writes about his successes and slip-ups, including what he calls the worst mistake he's ever made. I'm David Greene, Total Recall, Arnold Schwarzenegger, in the studio, next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Today's highs, 68 degrees, mostly cloudy and a chance of rain. For tonight, showers are likely and the low will be in the mid-50s. Tomorrow, a cloudy day with a good chance of rain and a high of 69. Mostly sunny on Thursday and warmer with a high of 74. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll-free. 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. And, of course, we're going to be coming up next, talking hockey with the Michigan State hockey season right around the corner. They'll be starting a camp soon. And let's bring in our good friend, the head coach of Michigan State's hockey team, Tom Anastas. And we'll bring in Tom and talk a little bit of hockey with Tom. And so let's be getting him on now. And so we'll bring him in shortly and let you get a chance to talk if you have any questions with Tom Anastas. Once again, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here in WKAR. So let's bring in the coach, Tom Anastas of Michigan State. Tom, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Earl. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing good. It's another year of hockey, you know, another year. And you're still going to have a very young team. You brought in a lot of young recruits. How does that change the dynamics of this team when you bring in so many young players?
Well, it probably caused a lot of excitement, probably both good and bad at times, I would imagine. You know, with all the, I think there's a lot of youthful enthusiasm, which I think is terrific, and it's exciting being around the rink. And at the same time, you know, with that youthful enthusiasm, there's also a lot of inexperience. So I'm sure we'll go through the growing pains of gaining experience. But, you know, the energy level and excitement is very high around our arena and around our team. And we're real happy with the progress of the guys and the limited amount of time we've been able to work with them. And everybody, coaches, staff, players are all anxious to get going, you know, full bore come Saturday.
Yes, that's very exciting, especially at the start of the season. I mean, the fact that the NHL isn't going to be starting, I know that sort of hurts, you know, hockey overall when you don't have the big boys out there playing and practicing, but now you don't really have to worry about anybody, you know, getting out and probably leaving this first year. It seems, do you think it's more security for you and for the coaches knowing that most of these guys are definitely going to be here for another year or two, or do they have to wait and follow for the strike?
Yeah, I don't really know that's going to have a whole lot of impact quite yet. We'll find out, you know, ultimately when the league and the players union strike a deal. You know, we'll be impacted by however that CBA comes out. And, you know, the last CBA that they did 7 years ago or whatever it was really had an impact on in many ways encouraging, you know, top players or top student athletes to leave early. So I'm hoping that they don't do things that you know, are set up in a similar manner. But I guess we'll have to wait and see because we really don't have a seat at the bargaining table. We've given input for sure, but in these circumstances, you just never know how things will play out. So we know that's part of the process. We are, if if we're attracting the right kids who both excel in school and excel on the ice, that the risk of losing them early is just, you know, the price that we pay. And we want to see people, you know, the purpose of going to college is to prepare yourself for the next phase in life. And we're good with that. So, it's a little more difficult when you don't think somebody's ready to go and they leave. But, yeah, you know, that's all part of it. And we just have to manage that along the way.
Okay. Well, what do you expect from your team this year? I mean, last year's team, you know, you had a very good playoff, the depth on the bench play. You had everybody skating very fast for the whole year. That worked out quite well. So what do you expect from the team this year?
Well, I expect more of the same. Certainly we're going to miss Torrey Krug, who is our leading scorer and really our emotional leader on the team. And he played with a very high energy level and talent level, which really set the pace for our team. So we're going to have a group of guys step up and really fill that void for sure. But our style of play will continue to be much like people saw it last year. We'll play with high energy. We're bigger this year. So I would like to think that we'll be able to be a more physical team than we were last year, and at the same time handle more physicality from our opposition, which we struggled with at times last year. We have a lot of returning guys back. Although we lost some scoring, we have some guys that we hope will step up and really add more depth to our scoring. And I think the big question mark we're going to have will be on defense, where we've lost four guys and really five guys who played a lot last year and logged a lot of minutes. And that's where it's going to take us some time to go through growing pains, probably much like we're seeing with our football team, where, you know, they're happy with the skill level and talent level of our receivers and our quarterback. But it takes some time to get game experience. And I think we're going to see the same thing along our blue line. The one element that we do have coming back is Will Yanikap is a junior in goal. He's got a lot of playing experience. I'm quite confident that he's capable of carrying a big load. And we're quite confident with him and two freshman goaltenders who I think will push him that we should be good in the net, which is always important.
Tom, how important is the leadership? As you know, I talk with Mark and the others, and I know Izzo stresses the leadership. So how important is that, to having that leadership, that leader in the locker room, from the kids, taking on more responsibility on the ice and such?
Well, it's huge, Earl. It really is huge, and that's a real question mark on our team right now. We've been going through, since guys have been back to school, a number of processes to evaluate and see who will emerge in our leadership group, because it is critically important. And we had very strong leadership both in our captains last year and in the players that surrounded them. So we lost Torrey Krug, who was an exceptional leader for our team, and I'm not sure who's going to necessarily step up and play in his role or what group of players may do that, but it's critical to our success. So we hope that we're in a position, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, to determine, who those guys are from the most visible standpoint. And guys have been emerging, but I think it's real important that we identify the right guys to be the leaders of our team.
Okay. What about offensively? I mean, last year you were productive in a lot of games, but you had a few games where they were struggling. Do you expect to have a really good offensive team, say more consistent than you were last year?
I would expect to be more of the same that we saw last year. I think that unless we have some players that really emerge, we don't have any players that have really established themselves as offensive players, within our league. And so we're going to need some players to step up and emerge into, a higher level of offensive output. I'm not sure who those players will be. We'll wait and see. And, a number of players will be provided that opportunity, and we'll see who kind of grabs it. But, we are going to go through a change in that regard, and I think there are certainly players who are capable of emerging offensively. We'll just have to wait and see if they're ready for it.
Yes, and I know you had to do some renovation over there at Munn Arena. I know the arena, haven't been in there yet, but I understand the arena really looks good these days.
Well, yeah, we're gearing up for more of a major renovation in the future here, where we're going to change our ice plant, and we're looking at, you know, adding some other components. But we're always trying to find little ways to make the experience better, enhance our player development, and you know, create an environment that the student athletes can really benefit and maximize their time that they spend at the rink and at the Smith Center. And at the same time, try to create an environment that's fun for fans. So tonight, as you know, we have our Meet the Spartans.
Yes.
And, you know, we're all looking forward to meeting both our student fans and the community fans to launch a new season.
Yes, and that's the thing with the hockey program. You're starting a student fan section. I know, as you know, even when you were here, you know, the fan, the games were just selling out, and mostly it was with the older fans. And now, you know, you're able to get in more student fans and make them a part of the process, and that's going to help liven up the arena a lot more, won't it?
It really has. I think we took a real good step last year. We had a very good group of core fans amongst the students. And this year we hope to continue to grow that and expand it. And, you know, we've tried to do a number of things to integrate those students with our team. And we want to continue to do that because, you know, the way we view it, they're an important part of our team. And so, you know, the better they do, the more impact they make on the entire environment, the greater impact it makes on our team, and ultimately gives us a home ice advantage and gives us the best chance to win. So those students that we had last year were doing it. They did a terrific job for us, and we hope to continue to grow that. So, again, they can be part of our team because they really are and making a big difference in our overall success at home.
Okay. Got a caller for you. We got Woody on the line. Woody, how you doing?
All right. Good. Tom, I got this question for you. If the NHL doesn't settle until late in December or whatever, will the games for the GLI go back to Joe Louis, or will they still set up the rink in Comerica Park?
Yeah, that's a great question, Woody. And what will ultimately happen? I don't know what the date is, but I'm sure the NHL has a kind of a drop-dead date to pull off that Winter Classic and the Winter Festival that we're part of. And so it's my understanding at this point, if – for some reason the NHL cancels that event, they will move our games in the GLI indoors back to Joe Louis Arena, and actually the dates change. They're pushed back 1 day. So as it stands today, we're scheduled to play outdoors at Comerica Park, and I believe it's December 27th and 28th. If the NHL cancels the Winter Classic, our games will move back to the 28th and 29th in Joe Louis Arena.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Okay, oh, you're welcome. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. And yes, when you look at the games, that's definitely what will be a little change in everything if you have to move that one. But, you know, the GLI has really become such a great tournament, very popular over the years. I got a lot of friends. They just say they don't go to hockey, but they go to the GLI.
Well, you know, it's one of those neat events that comes at, you know, approximately the same time every year around the holidays between Christmas and New Year's. It's a real fun atmosphere down at Joe Louis Arena in downtown Detroit, for that matter. And, you know, it's one of those opportunities where families are at home. They get to come. It's affordable. They can bring their whole family. They can follow their school. So it's really grown into a very nice holiday tradition. I know our players always look forward to playing in it. The hockey's real good. And, you know, the teams come back from having a little bit of a holiday break, have very little time to practice and go play. But everybody looks forward to it from a competition standpoint. And it's really an important part of launching the second half of the season on the right foot.
Yes. Hey, Tom, before I let you go, I just want to ask you one more thing about how much team speed do you have? You had a lot of good speed last year. Is that going to continue, or how much team speed do you expect you'll have to be out there playing? Because the guys really played fast last year.
You know, Earl, we did. We had very good team speed last year, and I'm going to say that it's pretty darn comparable. That's going to be a real staple in how we play We recruit to it. We're very pleased with the speed of the players that are coming in. So I think you're going to see speed at a very similar level, and certainly part of speed is decision-making and puck movement, and I think some of that's going to come as our you know, younger guys gain experience. But in terms of skating speed, it's going to be very similar. And I think what you'll also see is our physicality will add to our team speed a little bit. And I think our physicality should actually be higher than it was last year. So overall, it's moving in the right direction.
Okay. Hey, Tom, I want to thank you for joining me. I'll be talking to you during the season. We'll get you on a few more times during the year, buddy.
Sounds good, Earl. Thanks for having me, and you have a great day.
Okay, you too, Tom. Thanks a lot. Yep, bye-bye. And that's Tom Anastas, the Michigan State hockey coach. We'll talk with Tom a lot more during the season to get his thoughts on how the team is going and how they're developing. And that'll be the next time we have him on. We'll talk about how those players have developed and how he's looking at the team. So give us a call. We'll be open line for the rest of the show. So give us a call right here at 355-9527 or toll-free 877-9527-870. And our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. And Aaron, I know you like you're a hockey guy, you're a hockey and a golf guy. So are you looking forward to this season? Do you expect to be? I know this is your last year here, but will you be in that student section?
Yeah, I might get over there. I go to school here, so I guess they go hand in hand. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited for the season that starts. I mean, you know, unfortunately, the NHL has their problems, so. You know, this might help the college game a little bit. Maybe there'll be some more attention on the college game.
Yes, because I hear that they may lock the players out for the whole year this year. I mean, that's a strong rumor out there that because the owners really are so determined to change the whole structure of the system, the players might be locked out for the whole year.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to go on the radio and talk about one man, too much. But Gary Bettman. I mean, let's face it. I think most of us can agree that he's probably the worst thing to happen to hockey. I mean, the fact is that guy could care less about the players. He gets booed every time he goes and has to go somewhere. He doesn't care. He lets it happen. He could care less about hockey and the players. But, you know, I guess I'll leave it at that.
It's unfortunate. He has a lot of enemies. And then he's got Donald Fehr, which a lot of people don't like Donald Fehr either. The hockey has hired him. He's their main guy, in the negotiations. So, this could be a long negotiation with Donald Fehr in there.
Yeah, it's not looking pretty. Luckily for a lot of the players, some of the players, that are international players anyway, Datsyuk is overseas playing. Some of the other guys are,
going overseas.
Some of the other guys are just taken to the rink at other places, rinks that they can play at that just on their own time. Mm-hmm. There's obviously still being able to play some hockey, but obviously it's not the NHL. I don't know what's going to happen, but it wasn't good from the get-go, and Bettman clearly stated that before it even started that, hey, I don't like you guys, and I'm going to get my way. It's either my way or the highway, and frankly, that's the way he's going to play it, and that's probably how it's going to play out, and unfortunately, that's a terrible way to go about it, and he has done no good for the hockey organization, and frankly, since I'm going on about it, I'll say this much. Hopefully, he can he gets axed pretty soon.
Well, I don't know, because as you know, the commissioners always work for. His commissioner, the owners are the ones who call the shots. So if he's doing what they want him to do, so I don't know if he's going to get fired. If he can change the structure of the game, that's what hockey wants. That's what the ownership wants. So we'll see. It'll be coming up. Hey, want to thank you all for calling, and thank you all for listening. Invite you to come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. You've been listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we ask you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up, talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. So make sure you have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening. We'll see you tomorrow right here on WKAR.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.